You are listening to the INCJ podcast, conversations about international criminal justice.
Hello and welcome back to the INCJ news desk for 2025. And I'm really pleased to be joined by Karen. You'll have to apologise to me. Can you say your surname again for me? I have a real problem with getting surnames right.
It's okay. It's Karen Adhiambo Oluwet.
Wonderful. Thank you. I'll put the note onto the blog when we share this. And you're based in Kenya. So I'll, as we've done with the other speakers today, it's like 10 minutes to talk about yourself and your project and the research and the work that you're undertaking. And then we'll drop in for some questions and a discussion once you finish that. So thank you and over to you.
Okay. Hello, everyone. My name is Karen Adhiambo Oluwet. I'm a senior probation officer based at Ngong Probation Office here in Kenya. I'm also a student, master's student, taking counseling psychology at the Catholic University of Eastern Africa. I'm truly honored to join this year's INCJ News Desk to share with you a snapshot of my ongoing research. So basically, we are going to talk about the invisible wounds, that is the secondary traumatic stress, and the family disruptions among the probation officers. So this work responds to an emerging concern that is often overlooked in the criminal justice system, that is the emotional costs carried by the professionals who stand between the justice system and the society. So I'm inviting you to listen and to also interact with me. So yes. So let's set the context within which I decided to do this research. So probation officers in Kenya, like many across the world, they support individuals involved in crime and in most of the time in distressing situations that involve violence, trauma, family breakdowns, sexual offenses, child protection, and also in community integration. Yet while we work to support rehabilitation and protect communities, little attention is paid on the welfare of the probation officer. And we do not look at how this exposure impacts on the officer and also on their family members. So my proposal in the research that I'm doing highlights these stressors. Clearly, for example, how the probation officers routinely engage cases that involve trauma and violence. Some of them are child abuse, the sexual offenses, and family instability. So most of this time, probation officers experience emotional exhaustion that comes from the nature of their job. And this one, the emotional exhaustion spills over to their family members. Okay. So why do this research? So though the Kenyan system, the Kenyan criminal justice system reforms, they are focused on offenders and victims. And the well-being of probation officers remains understudied. And globally, there's increasing recognition that justice workers experience secondary traumatic stress, that is STS. STS, a condition that mirrors PTSD, the post-traumatic stress disorder. And it emerges from indirect exposure to trauma. And in Kenya, this reality is present, but it's largely undocumented. So my study therefore seeks to answer two critical questions. How does secondary traumatic stress affect probation officers? And then the next one is, how does this stress spill over into the communication, emotional availability, and role functioning within their families? This linkage between professional trauma, exposure, and family life is a gap in Kenyan research. And my proposal seeks to address this gap. Okay. So, what is secondary traumatic stress? So it's like I said before, it mirrors the symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorders, and I'll highlight the symptoms like you can see there. The first one is intrusion. These are the unwanted thoughts, flashbacks, or even vivid recollection of disturbing cases. And then the next one is avoidance, where emotionally the officer will emotionally shut down, or they will withdraw from situations, or even avoid reminders of some of the work that some of the work experiences that they had. And then the next one is hyper arousal. This is heightened irritability, sleep disturbances, or constantly being on the edge. So my proposal identifies this as the core indicators of a secondary stress, secondary traumatic stress, which officers frequently experience due to repeated exposure to a traumatic case, the cases that they interact with on a daily basis. Okay. So what happens at home? How does this STS affect the family members of a probation officer? So the crucial contribution of this research is basically to link how STSS, that is the secondary traumatic stress, within the family of the family of the probation officer. And so it uses three main theories. The first one being secondary traumatic stress by Charles Figley. And then the next one is the Bowen's system theory, family system theory, and also the job demands resource model. So STSS, the secondary traumatic stress, have an impact on the family dynamics of the probation officers. So the first one is it can cause communication breakdown, whereby the officer may come home emotionally exhausted and depleted, and therefore they become unresponsive and easily irritable. And then the next one is reduced emotional availability, whereby they have difficulty offering affection, empathy, and even their presence to their children and their spouses. And then the next one is impaired role functioning, where they struggle to fulfill parental or relational or even the household roles due to stress and emotional fatigue. So my proposal highlights that emotional strain at work often spills over into family life. And this affects the cohesion, stability, and overall functioning of the family. And so this aligns with the international evidence, but it is rarely documented in most African contexts. So, so far, what am I finding in my study? From the conversations that I've had with most probation officers, they have reported struggling to fulfill their parental, relational, and household roles. And some of them have pointed out that they feel drained. Yeah. Before they even get home, they're already tired. Many officers, they report experiencing sleep problems, experiencing being irritable, easily irritable, and also feeling emotionally exhausted. as a result of being exposed to traumatic cases. And then some of them also, they've reported to experience communication issues with their partners and even with their children after a long day of dealing with chaos and crisis. And also some officers report that they've been feeling emotionally less present because they feel drained. Even before they walk into the door, they're already feeling tired. And then some have also experienced avoidance behavior where they prefer to remain silent or isolated at home. And at times it can be overwhelming because of what they're experiencing. And some prefer to even stay online or even stick on their phones just to avoid interacting with their children and even their spouses. And in this case, we cannot blame them because after all, they're trying to cope with the overwhelming caseloads at work. And truth be told, after the COVID-19 in 2020, we experienced a rise in caseloads, and it's becoming a serious concern, and especially in the judicial system. Okay, so some of the coping strategies that officers have reported to experience, as a result to deal with the emotional strain that they are experiencing as a result of their work, they resort to family support, or even friends. They lean on friends for support, and some also have very strong coping skills to deal with. We call it self-efficacy. To deal with the rising pressure that comes from their work, and they also have a high self awareness, whereby they are aware of what they are experiencing, and how to deal with the stress that they're facing. Then we also have those that experience open communication as a result to deal with the stress that is coming from within. Okay, so why do we think that this conversation matter to us? And before we dive into that, we also have the factors that can be used or that officers employ to deal with the stress. There's also the organizational support that we have, where these include debriefing, supervision, and also training to reduce the vulnerability of the stress that comes from secondary exposure to traumatic events or even content. Okay. So some of these include, like I mentioned before, supervision, debriefing, training, and also having trauma-informed leadership, and also employee wellness programs. Okay. So these are just some of the ways that we can that you can deal with this secondary traumatic stress that officers experience. So in integrating trauma-informed approaches in terms of how we handle these cases, through training, like I'd mentioned, and also creating family sensitive support programs for probation officers. This is very important, where we not only address the issues of the officer, but also reciprocate the same to their family members. Okay, and also encouraging peer support system. This is very important because we sharpen each other, just like it says that just like the iron sharpens iron, we sharpen each other and help each other. Okay. So before we go into that, so why does this conversation matter to us right now? Across Kenya, the civil service, specifically, I'm going to draw into the probation office. There's a growing national outcry for mental health support. As as the probation officers dealing with the people that are already distressed, we experience, we carry a lot of emotional burden. And if left unaddressed, it can harm not only the officer, but also the quality of service that they deliver. And also it spills over to their communities. Okay. Because when an officer breaks down, the family will be affected. And also when the family is affected, then the social fabric of or the social fabric will weaken. So it is important for us to have this conversation of how can we improve the welfare of the probation officers? How can we address the trauma that they carry as a result of the work that they do? Okay? So when you look ahead, what can we do, or what can we prioritize in the next coming year? Okay, so based on the research that I'm doing, I want to propose a few areas that the justice system can focus on. One of them being integrating the trauma-informed practices into probation work. This can really help in terms of getting to address the trauma itself. And another one is where the institutionalizing regular mental health screening for justice practitioners. This is very important, where we get to screen on how are we doing, what is the state of our mental well-being. And then creating family-sensitive wellness programs. This will address the effects of the trauma that experience the officers carry to their family members. Training and supervision frameworks to address the emotional harm costs or experienced by the officers in their role. And also the national policy discussions. This is very, very important, where the officers, like in the broader space, that it's a concern that should be addressed at the by even our national government and leaders at the forefront, because it is something that is happening and we cannot ignore, we cannot underlook it. Once a probation officer is exposed to traumatic incidences, for instance, there are crimes like robbery with violence. Some of them are very violent. Offenses like rape and defilement. When we hear these narrations from the victims, we carry that burden, and it weighs us down as probation officers. And in the same way, since we live within a community, we have spouses, we have children, we have brothers and sisters out there, we have parents, we have people that we interact with. And if this stress and if this wound is not addressed, we throw it down there. Yeah, it overflows from us to the people that are around us. So, for instance, if it's a poison, it means that if it is killing me, it is also killing my child, it is also killing my spouse, it is also killing my brother out there, because I'm carrying it out, I'm carrying it from within. So, just to close it down. Like I was saying, that when a probation officer break down, it also means that the families will also break down. And when the family break down, the community breaks, their community definitely will be affected. So supporting the well-being of probation officer is very important. It is very crucial. We cannot ignore it. Yeah. So for the criminal justice system to continue running smoothly, then it means that not only the practitioners must be empowered, but the offenders must be empowered, and also the probationers must also be empowered in order to have a society that is safe for us to live in. So that marks the end of my presentation. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to share my work. It is my first time, so at some point I was fidgeting. So thank you so much again for giving me this chance to just share. Yeah, I'm looking forward to having more dialogue with you. So back to you, Rob.
Wonderful. You did very well. It was very you wouldn't have detected it was your first time. I suppose the immediate question that I've got is, how does an international conversation help you with this process? And it because you've identified a common theme that each of our speakers have spoken about today in different ways. But it's recognizing how these go past those our own community, our own culture, our own nation borders, and actually spread, making sure that we're talking with each other to learn from each other in different ways across those borders.
Yes, thank you for the question. Having this conversation at an international level, it helps to create awareness that there's a problem indeed that needs to be addressed. And also having a chance to learn from my colleagues from all over the world on how they're handling the stress that comes from being exposed to traumatic content from their work. And so having this conversation at a global level, it also recognizes that it is something that cuts across different countries, different cultures, and therefore it needs a global attention. It needs to be addressed as soon as possible, because on a daily basis we handle a criminal, we handle traumatic content, and we cannot ignore it. We cannot ignore it. So it is high time we hold our hands and address it and talk about it to create more awareness on it.
Any other questions, Dave? Sorry, you're on mute, Dave.
Apologies, apologies. Thank you very much, Karen. That was a very, very clear and very, very well structured and very strong argument that you've presented. And I've really valued hearing it. I was in. Rob just asked the question or raised the issue about these issues being ones which are shared internationally. I'm all and you responded to that, but I also think there's a vertical dimension to it between different occupations and professions. And certainly in the jurisdictions that I have some awareness of, criminal justice does not have the support systems, even the recognition systems in place to deal with to deal with primary and secondary trauma. As you described, but these things are much more. But yet, other professions and other areas have recognized it. So there are a lot more facilities and services in the health professions. In other parts of the criminal justice system, certainly in the UK, in relation to police officers, and indeed prison officers, there's a recognition of the trauma that is embedded in the job that people do. So, why is it that community-based criminal justice workers seem to have been forgotten? That's my question. Why have they been forgotten? It's the argument you're making about tenure is one which can apply directly, certainly, to the UK. And I think from what Brian was talking about earlier, would be applicable in his jurisdiction in Ireland.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Dave, for that insightful question. One of the things that one of the challenges that mental health sector experience in especially in most African countries is that mental health is not embraced like it's a problem. Just like emotional wounds are not seen, they're not visible. So we, as an, most Africans, we do not acknowledge that when someone has a problem psychologically, we don't take it seriously. It's like we assume that they're either possessed by demons, so we take them for prayers. We do not address it as a medical issue. So it becomes a challenge because these wounds cannot be seen, yet they're affecting us. So it has become a challenge because acknowledging that when I listen to a story, a traumatic story, a sad story, it affects me and it will affect my emotional well-being. And because of I'm affected, it also means that someone who is close to me, like a child or a spouse, will also be affected. So the challenge comes in most African countries and contexts. We do not acknowledge mental problems as a medical issue that needs to be addressed. And so most of the time, when someone is suffering emotionally, for instance, if someone is suicidal or they have a suicidal ideation, it's so easy for Africans to think of, let me take them for prayers, something is wrong with them. But we're not addressing it like an issue, like a medical issue. Like probably there's an underlying issue like depression, or they have substance abuse disorder that needs to be attended to medically. So it has become a problem in acknowledging that probation officers and even other professions, they suffer as a result of being exposed to traumatic incidences that they experience at work. Yes.
Any other questions, Aye? Have you got?
Hi, Karen. Yes, I think we have similar situations because lots of my research is still China-based. In Chinese professionals I work with in criminal justice system, primarily in prison, but similarly, whether it's organizational or personal or social level, there's still a lot of stigma and the person expected to just hold it together on their own. They're not supposed to be vulnerable. And if they're vulnerable, there's no support until it's too late, especially after COVID, like you mentioned as well, the suicide rate, informal rate, there's no official rate, but from my knowledge, it's going up significantly among prison officers. My question to you is, on one of your slides, you mentioned institutional support, including trauma-informed leadership. How well are they implemented in reality?
Thank you. Thank you for the question. Yeah, in reality, it's quite a challenge. And like you mentioned, the stigma attached to acknowledging mental disorder or mental issues or mental health wellness, and how we are expected to be okay even if we are not okay, and so the implementation becomes a challenge because of, well, first of all, like I'd mentioned before, acknowledging that I have a mental problem that has been brought about or attributed to my exposure. The kind of work that I do, it becomes a challenge because even in medical treatment, I have to acknowledge that I'm feeling unwell for me to use a drug or a medicine to become better. So even if these policies are there, but implementing them becomes an issue because first of all, we are not aware that we have a problem that needs to be addressed. Secondly, it's also the stigma that is attached to in acknowledging that I have a problem. Therefore, I need this help, and also lack of lack of the help seeking behavior initiative. It's a bit low because we want to cover up. We want to pretend that we're okay, and we do not want to seek the help. We do not want to reach out. For instance, we have a hotline for civil servants or for mental for therapy and counseling services that our government come in place with. We have a ministry that is in charge of taking care of the mental wellness of civil servants. But you realize that the uptake of it, the implementation bit, becomes a challenge. First of all, most civil servants are not aware of these services. And then another one is now the stigma. If I go seek counseling, I'll be pronounced mad. I mean, people will look at me with different eyes. So it becomes a challenge in embracing even these policies.
Well, I think we are unfortunately out of time. We've got to move on to our next item. But I think we will follow up with this, and it was a very insightful and very thoughtful, as Dave said, a very thoughtful presentation. And I think the serendipity of having a number of conversations that followed on from each other was really, really great. So thank you very much again, Karen, for that presentation, and look forward to catching up with you again soon.
You have been listening to the INCJ podcast, conversations about international criminal justice. To find out more, go to our website at criminaljusticenetwork.net or follow us on Twitter at INTCJ Network.